Guys, we are back. Fun stuff to talk about today. We'll be commenting as the Laker game against Golden State is finishing up live. So there won't be any spoilers because you already know what's happening, but you'll be catching my reaction. I'm not in a good mood right now watching this fucking game. That's all I got to say. All right. They look a little sleepy tonight. Granted, Warriors really need this one tonight. But today we're going to talk F1 first, then we'll get into the Final Four. And unless there's like anything else you guys want to put your two cents in, like Shohei Ohtani with the walk-off home run against Aaron's Braves. That was so beautiful, baby. Baseball's back and I'm loving it. I looked up Dodger tickets and they're expensive as hell.
I mean, I thought you wanted to talk about the first place White Sox in the most competitive division in baseball, the AL Central.
Dude, are they?
Rome, it's a four-way tie for first. You got four teams, two and four.
2-4. Oh, Jesus. Man, that's tight.
It's tight.
So they lost two more games since we last been on?
Yeah, but they're still in first place.
Hey, first place. As long as it's all competitive, I guess.
They're the only team in the division with a positive run differential, man. You know, they're ready for a run.
That's really important. I like that stat of the day there from Jason on his White Sox. I imagine we'd be talking about a lot of White Sox this year if they win like one or two games every week, right?
Oh, 100%, man. I mean that's one or two more games than a year ago.
Yeah, we'll have to do over-unders on that one. For sure.
I believe their win-loss total was 59.5 for the White Sox.
So. That's actually a pretty good number. What did they have last year?
Well, they lost, 121 games last year? Or 123? Yeah. What was it? Something like that.
So they won 30... I can't do math. Right? 38?
I think they won 41 games. And they won 41 and 121.
Yeah.
I like them to win like 55. That sounds pretty good.
I think they'll win. I said they would lose less than 100 games, so I'll stand by that.
I'm good for Aaron. I'm glad we didn't do over-unders, because I'll tell you, I probably would have just been down on the White Sox and taken the under, but I think Aaron's right. I think they hit the over. But I would have been really wrong on Aaron's Braves right now, because I would have picked them as a contender, but damn, they look bad.
They do look bad right now.
I know. It's unfortunate, right? When we do over-unders, it's going to be like 2 weeks in. Things could turn around.
Well, I don't have what their over-under was for the season to start for the Braves, but yeah, not a good start. Basically, Major League Baseball did them no favors traveling all the way out to the West Coast after spring training in Florida. Terrible job by Major League Baseball and the scheduling for that.
Well, back-to-back, dude. You got the Padres and you got the Dodgers. That sucks.
You can say what you want about the Braves being 0-7. They have sucked. The two teams they played are the only beating teams in baseball currently right now, in the Dodgers and Padres.
Yeah, arguably and two of the best teams, too.
Give Ohtani credit. That was a great pitch. Not a bad pitch. Off the plate in a ball, and he hits it out of the park.
On bobblehead night. It was his bobblehead night.
I think it's more in the bat than the man. I think it's that torpedo bat, but
he doesn't use it.
They say he didn't gamble on sports either, but I don't buy it.
This guy. Week two. The hate is strong from Aaron Toler, man. I am loving it.
I mean, you gotta feel sorry for the San Francisco Giants. I think they're off to their best start in like, I don't know, 15, 20 years through six games, and they're in third place in the division.
That's a tough division, dude. But
that is a good division. Arizona's playing good baseball too.
Yep.
Colorado sucks, but they got to bring my boy Zach Veen up from the minors. He's ready to go on my team. He's ready. I'm ready to get him in my lineup. Just give him the call.
Oh man,
Jason over there, first place there, right? I think I saw you in first place.
I was in third. I don't know if I knocked up to first.
I think I saw you in first right now.
We'll just wait, man. Suarez and a couple of guys on my team going off early. So offense is looking good. Pitching a little shaky. My guy Harrington, good thing I didn't call him up for the minors, because his first start wasn't good for the Pirates. So hopefully they send him back down. We can get him brought up back up in the middle of the season.
Yeah, I was wondering, why are you asking me about a minor? I'm like, oh, okay, yeah, you got this guy in the minor league draft.
I'm not sure if you drafted him.
But I got that bonus yesterday. I hit that good little bonus.
That's a good bonus. They're probably, Rome, you probably wonder what we're talking about. I mean, you know, one of the most competitive fantasy leagues ever, NL only 10 team league. Aaron invited me to, you know, it's got a legacy of history in the a bunch of the unique, goofy rules of this league. You get bonuses based off certain things in the league. So if a player
hits, told me.
A player hits three home runs in a game, everyone's got to pay the man. So Aaron had a guy go off yesterday for three home runs. So the rest of us in the league got to pay Aaron.
I kind of like that rule. It's kind of fun.
It is. It saved me a ton of money last year. And no lie, Aaron would kind of let me know when I had a random guy go off. He'd always kind of pay. He's like, hey, you might want to check out so-and-so on your team. Ah, three home run bonus.
Nice.
Yep. Well, we've had – so you can get bonuses or you can get what we call a reverse bonus. If your players do so bad, you actually have to pay out players. So we actually had – in the first game of the season, a guy struck out five times. That's a reverse bonus where you have to pay out $10 to each owner. So those get expensive.
That'd be kind of nice if they did that, like, for real. Like, you haven't been worth that $50 million contract if the Senate backs them. Send some money back.
It would never happen, but if pro sports really worked like that and all the stuff was incentive laden for these guys, it'd be a hell of a test on the effort that's put out for these guys if stats counted like that.
I want to turn to like Hunger Games for pro athletes. They make a lot of money now. Let's spice up the intensity a little bit. I kind of like that rule.
I mean, baseball would be interesting. I think basketball, just off the top of my head, might be the most interesting given how much load management and saving throughout the regular seasons of these guys. If they were going for, man, I need to get this max out bonus to get points and rebounds and all this type of stuff, I think you'd see some much more competitive games throughout the year. But, you know.
Yeah, man. I mean, you'd have to do bonuses, what, points, minutes, games played. Yeah. It'd be interesting, but I don't ever see the NBA ever agreeing to anything like that.
100% not. And we say that as guys on a podcast right now, but if it was our job and we were paid day to day based on our performance, I don't think we'd like it either. So can I totally understand as a player never wanting to give that up.
I kind of do get paid on my performance, you know? I'm not selling those expensive Bordeaux's.
That's true. That's true. I don't. So, you know, I have my guaranteed salary every week. So I want to keep that, you know?
This guy. This guy right here.
You still got to show up and be present. You still got to be present.
I got to be present. You know, there's no load management.
You don't have to be on your A game all the time.
Not all the time. I mean, if I'm not, you know, there is a next day I do have to talk through building performance, you know, but, you know, whatever. But
all right. Let's get into it. That's a nice little intro. Let's talk F1. It's the Japan Grand Prix this weekend, Saturday night for us at 10 o'clock.
Yes, 10 p.m.
Not midnight. It's the Suzuka Circuit. It is one that I believe Max Verstappen has won back to back to back the last 3 years. He's also won pole positioning, I think, in the last 2 years. And it's also the only circuit or the only track in F1 that features a figure eight track. So lots of interesting turns and twists in there. I also was reading up how they recently repaved a portion of the track, so it's going to be a lot more grittier. Not sure if, I guess last year a lot of people either did like a two pit stop or a three. The two seemed to be a lot better, but with the tires, different things in play, it could be in play that there might be a little bit more pit stops in this version, but everyone's going to find out as we kick things off. But Japan Grand Prix this weekend, do you guys know who the favorite is right now?
Aaron, you were looking those up, right?
Yeah, so Lando Norris is the favorite with his teammate Oscar. Those are the 1-2 in the odds.
1-2?
Yeah. I believe I'll give you the third. I think Verstappen was number 3 on that list.
He was.
Yes, followed by Russell, and then you got Lewis. Charles and Lewis. So, yeah, that's your top 6 favorite guys to win.
Yeah, so Verstappen has won the last 3. Lewis Hamilton has dominated in the past on this track. He last won here in 2018 when he was with Mercedes. And then McLaren, they've been 2-3. They've done pretty well the last few years as well, getting some pretty decent points on this one. Where do you guys, or Jason, since you're the main F1 guy, how do you want to break this down, like kick things off for this one?
Yeah, you know, kind of looking at it, Aaron talked about the odds with it. You look at McLaren, we're recording after the first practice before the second practice. Lando Norris had the fastest lap, so no doubt the McLaren's probably favored. Norris potentially looking like the fastest one here after Piastri had, you know, the better Chinese Grand Prix. You know, they're probably odds on favorite to finish 1-2. The biggest story I think to follow this week is going to be Ferrari's performance, I think, given the double disqualification at the Chinese Grand Prix, kind of the underwhelming performance in Australia. This was the team picked to kind of contend with McLaren for the constructors' title, given that Red Bull had taken the step back throughout 2024. Mercedes was kind of lingering last year, but like never really was kind of a big threat. Ferrari was in kind of that 1-2-3 spot with Red Bull and really charging at the end of the season with some really good performance from Leclerc and Sainz. Adding Hamilton to the lineup, you know, talked about that in the last couple weeks in the pod. This was supposed to be, you know, the time for, you know, Hamilton to kind of to get the better car that he hadn't had in Mercedes the past 3-4 years. And Leclerc had already been performing well, and they were going to be the team to challenge, you know, the Constructors' champion last year, McLaren. So, two races in, and when you're looking at the standings right now from, you know, the constructor standpoint, you know, Ferrari's sitting fifth right now. They're behind Williams in the constructor standings. So, you know, or tied with Williams actually at 17 points right now. So, you know, Mercedes has kind of been, you know, the kind of the surprise team so far this year, given that Russell has been fairly consistent towards the top of the grid at the end. And Kimi Antonelli, I think we're going to be talking about him a ton this year in his rookie season and potentially years to come, is, hey, this is the next phenom. This is the next Verstappen or Hamilton. That's going to be kind of the legacy guy, but I don't think anyone expected them to be second place through two races right now. Will they have the car to sustain? You know, don't know. They didn't have it last year. Do they find a little something in this last year of the regulations if they can? You know, you're expecting kind of throwing Kimi into the lineup as a rookie that he wasn't, you know, you're going to have your ups and downs as a rookie as he, you know, goes to tracks he potentially has never gone to before, learns the F1 car, which is a lot bigger than the F2 car, and, you know, obviously has way more horsepower inside of it. So a lot to go through. So I think the pressure going back to it really on Ferrari, because if they're going to have a chance at catching McLaren, they got to keep up in this. They're going to have to win some races. And it's going to be on the qualifying performances too, because they need to be leading the field and kind of get out in front and kind of maintain that league and have the right strategy for what they're going to do. So, Rome, you talked about, you know, the repaving in certain spots of the places. What's the tire degradation going to be? What's the strategy? If you go to historic F1 stuff, like in recent memory, Ferrari is like, it's known as just messing up the strategy. Like, they can't get out of their own way. It's just like, you know, you live to be a Ferrari fan because of the legacy brand, but they're just going to break your heart. And we saw a little bit of that in the first race when we talked about Mercedes strategy and, you know, do we pit, do we not pit, when the rain came out and they messed that whole thing up and ended up finishing way lower on the grid compared to the McLarens and Red Bulls and George Russell in that race. So I think a lot of pressure on Mercedes. I know Lewis Hamilton hasn't really been stressing about it, that, hey, we're going to kind of find the way. They look better in China. He won the sprint, and they unfortunately got disqualified. But they really need to keep pace. I think they got to at least get one of these guys on the podium if they can finish right behind them. And if they can, one of them can get ahead of them, a couple of them, you know, one of the McLarens would be even better. But I think it's going to dictate a lot on the qualifying performance. Tire degradation on this track, you know, we'll see. The Chinese Grand Prix, it was one that, hey, was supposed to beat up the tires, and it did a little bit, but I think it wasn't as bad as they thought. If you go into this, you mentioned the figure eight on this, Rome, like the first turn into the second, third, and fourth turn, it's a bunch of windy, you know, right in a hard kind of like a almost to a U. You know, you go up a hill to the side, you're really banking the tires a lot, so you can really wear on the tires very quickly depending on where you're at in the car. And so there's some long speed straights into some hairpins that, you know, really can be kind of unpredictable. So I think there's a lot going into this race, but I'm going to put it on Ferrari as the most pressure to really have a breakout performance.
How did Ferrari test in the practice? How are they doing that?
Yeah, so if you looked at the practice, Lando was the fastest in practice, but Ferrari was third and was it third and fourth? Yeah, they were third and fourth. So, you know, they had Leclerc in third and Hamilton in fourth as far as the fastest lap perspective. George Russell finished second. So, so it's up there. I think they definitely got the speed. You know, Piastri was the one, I'm going to be honest, didn't watch, but Piastri was down at 15th. I don't know if they're trying something different from a setup from a car perspective. The first practice really doesn't give you the best indicator on where things are at. You'll probably see more tonight in the second practice and what the speed is. But I like them in that. I think Red Bull, if you're talking about, you know, what they have to prove in this race, that's where all the drama's at. Is Red Bull right now. So I think we talked about it on Monday a little bit at the end of the pod. They made the driver switch to Yuki Tsunoda and switching Liam Lawson back to the Racing Bulls car. Ton of drama on that. Max Verstappen, you know, liked a former racer's post as far as like Red Bull needs to get it together with kind of their stuff. And that was on Instagram. And Max,
oh, was it?
Yeah, Max didn't lie to me. He's like, no, I liked it. So obviously, given the point, the points that were made on it, I agreed with it because I liked the post. And it was like, oh, okay. So there hasn't been a ton of love lost with Max Verstappen and the Red Bull kind of management there. There's been a lot of hostility in 2024 last year with a lot of the drama surrounding Christian Horner, the team principal, and some of the kind of extracurricular outside activities that were taking place. That was a ton of drama around Christian Horner and, you know, a female staffer and an investigation going into him last year that was surrounding the team. And then they lost one of their main engineers midway season that has now gone to Aston Martin. And then the Red Bull Racing Program's kind of driver development person. I don't know what his official title with Red Bull it is, but Dr. Helmut Marko, you'll hear this guy's name a lot if you're kind of an F1 circle. So he basically is in the driver development thing for Red Bull. So he, you know, kind of, you know, grooms these guys from the ground up. You know, he used part of Verstappen's upbringing. Sebastian Vettel, which is another four-time F1 world champion for Red Bull, which kind of was the first driver to put Red Bull on the map. He kind of developed him. He is a very outspoken person, and he talks a lot of crap on a lot of these drivers. So he was very critical of a lot of the outgoing Red Bull drivers and kind of where they're at. He really doesn't hold back, but I think a lot of times the things he's putting out there really creates a ton of drama for Red Bull behind the scenes for everyone outside of Verstappen, because he is just very critical on people's performance. I know if you're looking at Isaac Hadjer, which is the other Racing Bulls driver, he was the guy who crashed in the kind of the warm-up lap at Australian Grand Prix, and he was crying and emotional about it. And he basically said that was embarrassing. How dare you cry and this and that. And so he doesn't give any BS. Like, he talks through, but man, he really lays it on these guys and, you know, in just interviews, he'll just be talking straight, which is cool and all, but I think adds a ton of the drama in the Red Bull side of like kind of what's going on. So I think all eyes will be on Red Bull and where they're at. Yuki Tsunoda, home Grand Prix in Japan, basically was, you know, a Honda kind of pushed driver through the Honda program. This is Red Bull's last year with Honda. And so this is a big race for Yuki. He was sixth in practice, right behind Verstappen, who was fifth. And Yuki's had, you know, had some good, pretty successful races in the Racing Bulls car the first two races. So now you give him what's supposed to be the better car in the main Red Bull seat. You know, this could potentially make Red Bull a little bit more competitive because Liam Lawson had not been the answer.
I think it's going to be a big weekend for Red Bull. I think they're going to race well this weekend. I think Verstappen's got a really good chance of winning this thing, and Yuki's going to race well too. So I expect them both to finish in the top 10, if not both top five. I expect a big, big race weekend from Red Bull this week, Japan and Grand Prix.
Jeez. Going back to the tire wear, I guess Pirelli always uses their hardest trio of compounds for this track. Allegedly, this is the hardest track out of all the circuits that really wears down the tire, so it'll be interesting. In the past, it's been two to three pit stops. Jason, do you think it's going to lean with the potential wear and tear is going to lean more towards three? And then with all the crazy hairpins and the sneakiness, the probability for a safety car is pretty high on this one.
Yeah, I think definitely when you're looking in the first class, first lap going into the first turn, I think that's where you definitely can see a lot drivers making an aggressive move. How many go wide into that?
Yeah.
I don't know, because, I mean, it is the harder track, but the Chinese Grand Prix was hard, too, and that was a low pit stop, too. These guys really stretch the times right now, so is it only a two-stop race? You know, because some of these tracks, man, they're just doing one-stop races and really having them massage the tires and they get into a groove and they're making longer runs than expected. So you can see some teams making some gamble here and just go for the lower stop strategy, especially maybe some of the lower performance teams. So maybe like a team like Williams, Carlos Sainz, you know, has a lot of strength and kind of making tires last. That's really what Lewis Hamilton's kind of what he's prided a lot of his career on, is being able to maintain some of these runs. So I think you get some teams aggressive and not wanting to stop. And, you know, because that's basically, when you look at it, it's a 20, what was the official? It's about a 20 to 25 second extra, you know, times you're going to put on your race. You know, is the stop worth the speed you're losing in some of the longer runs? And they're using the harder compound. You expect them, you know, to try to get, you know, a long stretch in the hardest compound, whatever they choose is the hards. Looking in that first practice, you know, they obviously were getting a lot of the hards and the mediums into that. So you'll probably see, you know, two stops with trying to get two hard compounds and a medium potentially. But it'll be interesting. I think it'll play into it, but I think it'll be extremely important on who gets the pull and is able to kind of get out in front, get the clean air and have them run their race and not have to, you know, wear out tires in some of these tight turners where the passing is at.
I guess with this being in Japan, Tsunoda is getting lots of love. It's a sellout crowd. And I guess giving like a lot of Japanese fans a lot to cheer for. Do you guys know how many Japanese drivers have won an F1 race before?
Total F1 race, or is it just the Japanese Grand Prix?
Total F1 races.
Whew.
It's a trick question.
Because it's zero?
Yeah, it's zero.
Okay.
None of the above.
There has been three Japanese drivers who have placed on the podium. They're all third place finishes, last one coming in 2004 from Takuma Sato, who won a couple Indianapolis 500s. But that's it, though. A lot of people like Tsunoda because I guess he's really quick. He's known for his speed, especially with the Racing Bulls on the lower circuit. So a lot of people like his chances to make some noise this year as a rookie.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. Now that he's joined up with the Team Red Bull off the Racing Bulls team, I think he's going to have a good weekend, man. Top five. I think he's going to finish at least
top five finish.
A
top five finish. How about Hamilton?
Not in the top five.
I feel like this is the race he breaks out in and gets podium.
I think Ferrari's going to continue to struggle. I think Mercedes, McLaren, and Red Bull are going to be the big winners this weekend.
Interesting. Yeah, I put it out there. I think Ferrari gets the comeback. You know, they're generally going to go through. I think one of the Ferraris is on the podium. It's going to depend which one is going to be quicker in qualifying. Likely, yeah. Probably lean Charles Leclerc probably on this a little bit. I think Hamilton's in the top five. I think you're probably going to give the two McLarens, the two Ferraris, and then, you know, probably Max maybe on there. But I think Yuki's going to be competitive. He could be in there in the mix with Max. We'll see. No one has really challenged Max, you know, on the Red Bull side really ever since Max's kind of first couple of years when Daniel Ricciardo was the number one driver and Max was making his way up. Sergio Perez won a few races a few years ago, early on in kind of Red Bull's most dominant fashion in 2023 when they won all but one race. And Perez, I think, won two of the races that year. But Max has never had the driver. It's been said, I don't know if Lewis said this or something like that, but there's never been a championship driver in the number two seat at Red Bull. No one has challenged Max. He's had, you know, he's just kind of had a good solid backup, where Lewis had Nico Rosberg, which was, he won a world championship on his own. When you look at the McLarens back in the day with Senna and Prost, both world champions inside of it, Max kind of like Michael Schumacher with Ferrari back in the day, where, you know, many people probably couldn't name Schumacher's second driver, where Schumacher dominated with the seven championships and didn't have that, you know, guy that's pushing him with the same equipment. So we'll see. Yuki, super aggressive, talented driver. A lot of it was really just about his preparation and stuff. If you're to believe what you saw in Drive to Survive, does he go that kind of extra mile? Is he willing to work out and do the couple extra things to be great? But has just the raw talent and ability behind the wheel. We talked in the last episode or something about the difference in the Red Bull setup versus some of the Racing Bull setup, where the Red Bull car has a very kind of minimal tolerance. Alex Albon, I may have talked to this in a previous spot, but gave a great interview for like down to the layman's on this. But if you ever played a racing game, you can kind of go like, and you can change kind of the sensitivity of like the steering wheel and the way the car reacts. And his description of is the way Max sets up that car and the way it's set up is it's the highest sensitivity. Like, it's just extremely difficult to drive because when it's driven well, it's the peak of perfection. But the window is like super small to get there. So if you aren't crisp around this stuff, this is where potentially Lawson was at, potentially where Sergio Perez lost the confidence. It's a hard car to drive, you know, versus like a regular car. And that's like the reputation around it. And so that, I think that's the best layman's terms you can drive through when Alex Albon was driving through. So can Yuki, he's got the experience in the Racing Bulls car, you know, does that kind of translate and where he's at in this race? But I like him. It's going to be, we talked about free agent year for Yuki. He puts this out and he does have a good performance in this year. You know, he's either getting paid as the number two Red Bull driver potentially, and they found their long-term solution, or he's a free agent and could he be Cadillac's driver next year? Could he be, you know, somebody else's team that's looking for, you know, a driver with a ton of upper potential?
A few last things. I guess there's like some history in the making. Hamilton is second with 5 wins here in the Japan Grand Prix behind Schumacher. Verstappen has 3, so he's looking an inch closer to him. Same thing with the poles. Verstappen's itching closer to Hamilton. He has 3 already from the past 3 years. Hamilton has 4 total, spanning 10 years at the spot. So should be pretty interesting if Hamilton can break through with his new team. Be fun. I guess they dress up in costumes over there in Japan and make it like a pretty big show. Like, they're out drinking all night long. It's like a wild, like Mardi Gras type of atmosphere, I guess.
Like a little rush hour at the casino vibe going on or what?
Dude, I've been seeing so many rush hour clips, especially with the Dodgers, like LA fans walking the Dodger Stadium, you know. You know the clip.
Yeah, I know the clip.
Dude, that's why all the daughter tickets are so expensive. I was hoping to take my daughter this weekend. I'm like, I'm not paying $200 to go see the Cubs.
Are you mean?
It's the Cubs are too. The Cubs are a hot ticket too. That's like one of the things you go. You got all of my fellow former Chicagoans who move out here. You know, they make the Cubs a hot ticket everywhere.
Here too, I like going to the Cubs games here. But yeah, it's Freddie Freeman bobblehead night on Friday. And
you got to go to the Sacramento A's, man. The ball's flying out of that park over there, man. A lot of runs being scored.
Is it?
I've never been to Sacramento, actually. The 8 years I've been here, I've probably driven through once to go to Tahoe. But yeah, it'd be kind of cool
to go. I like
Sacramento,
man. I like Sacramento.
Yeah, you like Sacramento?
Yeah, I like it.
It sounds like your kind of city.
I liked it.
It's like a suburb, but a city.
I went to Sacramento a while back for work. Went to a restaurant downtown Sacramento, and the mayor was eating dinner there. Do you know the former mayor of Sacramento, Aaron?
The basketball player?
Yeah.
Was it Kevin Johnson?
It was, yeah. So across the table a little bit, you know, the mayor was eating there. So it was interesting town. So yeah, I dig Sacramento too. That may be a good road trip there to get to that ballpark there. That's an easy flight up and down.
Yeah, it'd be fun. I just never wanted to move up there. You know, I figured I'll be living there one day anyways. All right, let's take a quick break. When we come back, Final Four.
Well, we didn't say who we thought was going to win the Japanese Grand Prix. I mean, who's Jason Gott?
You're fucking up my segues here. Go ahead, Aaron.
Oh, man.
I mean, we did everything except give the winner. I mean,
all right. Well, Yuri kind of told us who he thought's going to win. You know, you
who
said
did I say? Who did I say was going to win?
You said I don't remember, dude.
He there said Verstappen's going to win.
Yeah, Verstappen's going to win. Russell second, and Lando third. That's my podium.
And then you got the Japanese rookie.
Yeah.
Top five.
Yeah. I got him. Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's tough not to go chalk in this. I think Lando's going to win the race. I really think this is going to be a lot his year. I think you're going to get a Ferrari on the podium. I think it's probably going to be Charles. So I'll say you're going to get Lando, Charles, and Piastri as your podium.
I'm going to go a Ferrari. I'm going to go team here for podium. I'm leaning towards Hamilton to win. I will go with Lando to get second, McLaren. And then I'm going to go with Albon to get third.
Wow. Wow. Okay. All right.
He's been driving pretty well, and you know, they're doing some things over there. So you mentioned Jason, the middle of the pack. It's gonna be really tough. You know, it's a lot of tough competition outside of Alpine. I think they're like dead last. So yeah, I think maybe Albon maybe gets luck in this one.
I like Albon. Like, I mean, he was the one that I thought Red Bull, you know, in your Red Bull history would have been Max's number two. And he's been a really good driver on that team. Hasn't had it. I think the extra competition with Sainz this year in Williams. I mean, I think Williams is going to finish fifth in the constructors this year, which, you know, doesn't sound great if you're an F1 novice, but you know, that's big time for Williams to jump up in there. I think they pass Aston Martin. I think the big four, when it comes to McLaren, Ferrari, Mercedes, Red Bull, the top four, I think you're going to be between Williams, Aston Martin, maybe Haas, but I really think it's Williams and Aston Martin for fifth and sixth. Alpine, we'll see. Last year they got, I don't want to say lucky, but they had a double podium late last year in Brazil because of the rain and stuff going on there, and that really jumped them out of the constructors where they had a really bad car all year. So we'll see on that, but yeah. Albon, like that pick. I like Alex Albon a lot.
Yeah, I like him too. And I'll agree with Jason. I think Team Williams is going to get, you know, fifth place in the Constructors' Cup. I think they can get that.
All right. Take two. When we come back, final four. Don't go anywhere. Time for a little basketball preview for the final four. We'll predominantly do men's. I'll briefly touch on the women's. Got my favorite picks already locked in for that one. But it all kicks off.
You all done eating over there, Rum?
I think I'm done eating. So I was thinking about doing like these YouTube videos where I just, you know, just try all the new Trader Joe's snacks. You know, there's some fire ones, and these are pretty good. Slightly coated dark chocolate almonds. It says it's a thin layer of dark chocolate and dosed with cocoa and sea salt, but it's nice. It's not sweet. 5 grams of protein. Ignore everything else. I dig it.
You're trying to do one of those pods. I forgot what the thing is where just people listen to the different sounds people make when they eat or whatever like
ASMR,
that.
ASMR, I fucking hate them. I fucking hate them. My sister sent me that shit all the time. I'm just like, I'm not listening to this shit. Where like they just crinkle their nails or open packages. It's fucking annoying. I don't fucking get it. It's not fucking relaxing. It pisses me off. Shut the fuck up. You know?
I agree with you, Rome. I agree with you.
No.
I agree too. I just didn't know he's going to try to start a YouTube channel of him just trying snacks and stuff.
You know, just like people hearing me chew.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, Rome ruined the joke during the break. You know, Rome just... Rome's trying to be Brad Pitt for Ocean's 11. That's the thing. He just wants to look.
That's his name.
Yeah, he wants to be Rusty, you know, in Ocean's 11, just looking super cool, standing off the side. I'm just gonna eat these dark chocolate covered almonds and just stare out and, you know, plan the heist of the Bellagio, the MGM Grand.
You're absolutely fucking right.
You know, I wish I kind of want some dark chocolate almonds right now, man. Just get a little handful really in there and snack on them.
I also bought this espresso martini from Trader Joe's. It doesn't look very good, so I'm really curious how that is. Anyways, Final Four, when's the kickoff?
Saturday.
Tomorrow?
Saturday.
Why does it say tomorrow on my computer?
Because tomorrow's Saturday.
It's not.
If your computer's on Eastern time, then yeah, it would be Saturday.
My computer should not be on Eastern time.
But... Yeah, Saturday.
Well, regardless, it's 309 Auburn, Florida.
Correct.
And then, CBS. Oh,
my bad. I'm looking at the women's tournament. That was... Oh, dude. My dog just tried to jump into the couch and missed it and just totally flipped over.
And now he's looking at you like you didn't see that, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's embarrassing, dude.
He saw the dark chocolate covered almonds and he's like, I'm going to go get those.
Yeah. With the espresso latte from Trader Joe's.
All right. So my bad. Women's starts Thursday.
It'll be Friday, Rome. Today's Thursday. Tomorrow's Friday.
Oh, dude, I'm all turned around now.
Yeah. You're confused, man.
I'm confused. All right. So women's on Friday with the championship on Sunday during the day. That's kind of nice. Take a little nap afterwards. But let me go back to the men's then. Men's is on Saturday.
Big day Saturday. We got the men's Final Four semifinal matchups and then get a little break. And then, bam, we're riding to the Japan Grand Prix and call it a night. And then if you want, Rome, you're going to wake up and watch the women's final on a Sunday. So there's your weekend planned out for you.
I'm going to try to watch the game with my daughter and see if she actually just finishes one women's game this year. That's the goal. That's the goal.
Without a negative comment.
Without a negative comment.
That's the real key.
Women already hating on women. It starts really young.
Yeah.
But no one wants to talk about that.
Nobody. It starts really young.
This is part of the controversy after our segment, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We get political.
I don't know if you got enough time on tonight's episode to be able to do your controversy segment tonight, Rob.
So Florida and Auburn, 6 p.m. Eastern. So nice little afternoon game for us on the West Coast. How they get here, round 64, they beat up number 16, Norfolk State, 95-69. The next round, they beat up number 8, UConn. That was a really good game. Some drama. UConn was saying they got screwed out of that game. I thought the better team did win.
That was the coach. That was Hurley going. You know,
that was the coach.
That was Hurley
being
Hurley. He's a little emotional sometimes.
He's a little much. But Florida moves on. Sweet 16 beats a really good Maryland team, but pretty handily, 87-71. And then in the Elite Eight, they beat up who I thought was a really good Texas Tech team. I had Texas Tech winning it, actually. And then I had to console a whole bunch of their fans here in San Francisco.
Apparently my people, Rome.
That's what you said
Monday.
That is your people, yeah. So
did you let my mom know that you saw her up there in San Francisco?
No, dude. Oh, I should have mentioned that to her.
You should have mentioned it, man.
Yeah. But Florida has only lost once, I guess, since February 1st to Georgia. Maybe they didn't lose on February 1st, but they've only had one loss since then. They've been on a tear. Last time they've been this good is when they won back-to-back national championships, and now they have a pretty big matchup against also number one ranked Auburn. So, guys, give me your 2 cents.
I mean, yeah, Auburn's the number one overall seed in this tournament. Not really quite sure how they got that after losing, what, 3 of their final 5?
I'm not sure either.
I mean, they did have a very, very difficult schedule. They played out of conference some big games against Duke and other teams. But, yeah, I mean, Auburn already played Florida. That was a home game that they lost back on February 8th, home game. I believe it was 90-81 final. Florida beat them coming into this Final Four. I mean, Florida has, you know, they scraped by UConn. UConn was the defending back-to-back champs. That was a really good game, 2-point victory. And then Texas Tech, Rome, like you said, had that game. And Florida, 4 straight possessions for 3-pointers, 2 front-end misses and 1-1 for Texas Tech. And it just went downhill real quick for them, and Florida got that victory. Auburn's been pretty solid throughout this tournament, really hasn't been tested. Michigan had them kind of on the ropes there, but they went on like a 39-18 run in the final 12 minutes and pit them away. So should be a good game. Looking at the spread right now, you've got Auburn, a 2.5-point underdog. A lot of questions with Broome, their best player, the All-American.
Broome's a beast.
Yeah,
he's really good.
So he practiced in full today, so it looks like he's good to go in that matchup. Without him, I don't think Auburn has any chance of winning.
No chance.
But we'll see how he looks. Looked like that elbow, like kind of like he hyperextended it. a little bit. So we'll see how it feels coming into this matchup.
Yeah, I don't want to read into too much of the regular season thing game. You mentioned Aaron. Florida went into Auburn early in the season. I say earlier, but it was like, was it 2 months ago or something like that? At the time, though, Auburn was a significant favorite in that game. I think they were like 8.5 or 10.5 point favorite, I think, maybe when the game opened. So significant favorite for Auburn. Not only did they not cover, they lost they lost that game 90-81, as you said. Is there, I'm gonna lean to you on this. You know, Clayton Jr. been the top player for Florida all season. In that game, was probably the most impactful person on the Florida side. You know, if Auburn has any chance, you're talking about them potentially not having one of their key players. Is Clayton going to be the focus that Auburn's going to have to stop in order for Auburn to be able to win this game?
Yeah, I mean, they're going to have to stop him. I mean, he single-handedly beat UConn, and he single-handedly came back for them when they needed that victory to get to the Final Four here against Texas Tech. I mean, he can make big shots, big three-pointers. He played for Patino out of Iona. Did not follow him to St. John's. I guess he's from the Florida area, and he told his mom, hey, I'm coming home. Florida's put up the NIL money. I'm coming home. And he's got them back to the Final Four. I mean, Florida, like Roman mentioned, best team they've had since, you know, basically two decades ago after winning back-to-back national titles. They were in the Final Four and back, I guess, in 2014. I don't remember them then. But Todd Golden's done a good job getting these guys here. But, yeah, he's the key for Florida. As he goes, so does Florida. And if he has a big game, Auburn will be in trouble again.
Yeah, Auburn, they're pretty shaky on three-point land, and they've had a pretty tough stretch. Florida has had the best offense, I think, in the country over the past month and a half, and Florida not so much. We didn't talk about how Auburn got here, though. They defeated Alabama State pretty handily by 20 points in the round 64. In the round 32, they beat number 9 Creighton 82-70. Sweet 16, they beat up Michigan 78-65, and then in the Elite Eight, they defeated a really good Michigan State team 70-64, but dominated that game.
All of Michigan rooting against Auburn in this game, I think.
All of Michigan, yeah. Back-to-back, too. That's pretty crazy. But I guess it all hinges, man, on the defense. If they can contain Florida, they have a chance. But if Clayton goes off, as you mentioned, it's going to be pretty tough.
I mean, yeah. I mean, both teams are pretty good defensively. We'll see what Broom's got. He's got to play well. I think for Auburn, the key is going to be that young backcourt of theirs. They got a All-American 5-star freshman that's really, really good. The lefty, if he has a big game and hits some big shots, that could really help Auburn go in this one. And they've got a veteran senior guard. I think if their backcourt can match Clayton of Florida, then Auburn with Broom, if he's good, can get to pass Florida. That's really the key. Can their backcourt match Florida's backcourt? Florida's got a lot of tall guys, but they don't score a lot of points, you know, but they can throw a lot of different weapons at you, kind of wear you down. We've talked about it. Auburn doesn't have a ton of depth. They're probably running about 7 players, maybe 8, but they got a lot of 6'7", 6'8" wing guys that are long that can shoot threes. So I think it's going to be a high scoring game in the 70s. Should be interesting, but yeah, I think who's ever backcourt with the point guard play has a better matchup here is probably what's going to be the difference in this game.
Who you guys got?
I'm going to take Florida. I kind of led the witness there when I was asked about Clayton in this game. He had a big game and rallied them back versus Texas Tech. You know, the UConn performance is where it's at. He was the difference maker in the previous game versus Auburn. I think Florida's kind of just really on a run and really like their team where they're at. I'll take Florida. If you're asking me to pick the line, I think -2.5 is the last line I saw as well. I'd take Florida to cover as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I got all 4 number one seeds in the Final Four. So obviously this is my Final Four matchup. I did have my original bracket have Auburn winning. Even if Broom was healthy, I still like Florida. For the things Jason mentioned, I just think their guard play has been elite throughout this tournament. And that's going to be different. So I like Florida minus 2.5. I'm looking at the over-under right now at 159.5. Oh, man, that's high. I said these teams would get in the 70s. That's a game that gets in the 80s. I'm not sure it gets that high. I'm gonna go under 159.5, but I'm more sure I do like Florida laying the 2.5 to beat Auburn here.
That's a tough line. I'm going to go the opposite direction. I think it all rides on Broom, and I think he's going to show pretty big, jack up his stock to solidify that number 2 pick in the draft. Yeah, so go Auburn. Shake things up. Next game. Duke versus Houston. Duke, we all know how they got here. They just pretty much pummeled everybody along the way, including a really impressive Arizona team and Alabama, who I really loved. I really thought they were one of the better teams in the country, and they beat them by 20 points in the Elite Eight. Basically, with or without Cooper Flagg, he's an 18-year-old, should be in high school still, but he's dominating college. Even without him, his team plays really well. They won the tournament, or their conference tourney, rather, before moving on their current streak. And defensively, they've been switching a lot. They held Alabama down, Arizona pretty well. It's just really impressive. So on the other side, Houston, they beat a team I've never even heard of, SIU Edwardsville, 78-40. It was an ass whipping, to say the least. They beat Gonzaga, so it ruined their string of Sweet 16 showings, which was kind of nice.
I mean, now Houston holds that streak now.
Oh, really?
I think they're now up to 7 straight Sweet
16. Really?
6 or 7, yeah. They now hold that record.
That's amazing.
Current active streak.
I didn't even know that. Dang, that's an impressive stat. They defeated Purdue in the Sweet 16, 62-60, and then beat a pretty decent Tennessee team, 69-50. And I don't like Tennessee for obvious reasons. So, two really good teams. Tough matchup. What's the line on this one?
I've got currently Duke favored by 5, over under 136.5.
136. I guess we can get to that a little bit later, but why don't you guys break this game down for me?
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned Duke. Cooper Flagg should be a senior in high school. He's had a good tournament run. They didn't have him for the ACC tournament. They won that run, but I'm not putting much stock in that, you know, conference. The ACC was terrible during this NCAA run. The only team that won outside of the play-in game was Duke. But yeah, Duke, got a big win over Arizona in the Sweet 16. That was like a shootout there. I think 102-93 was the final, something like that. And then Alabama, they held them down, shut them out. So they've played really, really well. They're led by a couple freshmen, Flagg, and you know, they got the other guy. I can't think of his name right now. But they, very, very talented team, young team, playing against an experienced Houston team. There was an interesting stat I read today. Duke hasn't lost, I think, since maybe February. I believe Clemson beat them. But they've only played, I think it was mentioned, only one top 25 team defensively, and they lost that game. Houston, as we know, is a top 5 defensive team in the country. That's what they predicate themselves on. Kelvin Sampson's done a great job with that program since he's taken over. This is their second Final Four in 4 years. So is this a chance that Houston gets over? This is the 7th Final Four in school history. They've never won a title. Probably most famous for that 1983 NC State loss where the guy shoots the half-court shot, basically comes up short with enough time on the clock. It gets, you know, picked out of midair and slammed down for the dunk, and NC State wins that championship. But, Houston has looked really, really good, beat a good Purdue team, beat the snot out of Tennessee. I did not see that one coming. I thought Tennessee was going to beat Houston, and they just demolished them. So this will be a really, really good Final Four matchup. I'm actually looking forward to this game much more than I am Auburn, Florida.
Yeah, I agree with Aaron. Looking forward to this game as well. I think you're looking at you know, a little bit what Aaron's saying, a little bit of contrasting of two styles here with, you know, with the impressive defense that Houston brings to the table. You know, Duke, no slouch defensively for themselves, but you look in the tournament so far, you know, 93, 89, 100, 85 points. Like they're scoring points throughout the game. And it's just a deep, talented team, you know, with probably the best player in the country with Cooper Flagg now too. But as you guys mentioned, like even outside the ACC tournament, they're a great team even when he isn't playing. I picked Duke to win the tournament. I'm going to stick with that pick here. The 5.5 is a little scary just because of when you look at what Houston can be defensively. Actually, Aaron, did you say it's down to 5 now?
Yeah, I got 5.
Okay. Yeah, I saw 5.5. But either way, I think that number could potentially be a little scary to me just because of what for Houston's defense and they can keep things close there. I'd probably stay away from that, but I still think Duke, you know, wins this game. And really, I mean, I think you're setting up for a little bit. You know, they're gonna have a lot of players coming back. I think Aaron, you mentioned in Monday's pod about the Boozer's kids, you know, coming to Duke here next year too. So, is this the time? You know, I don't know. Say Duke's been down, but I mean, I can't kind of think right now. Like this is a little bit of a Duke run right now, and the ACC ain't what it used to be. The SEC is the basketball powerhouse. So now does Duke kind of get this? You know, they get a little bit of an easier road that the ACC isn't such a basketball powerhouse as it used to be. And now you're starting to set up a little bit of a Duke little run here over the next couple of years.
They haven't been down that long.
Well, I mean, I think the last title they won was in 2015.
Yeah, but when did Kay retire?
This is Shower's, what, third year?
So 3 years ago. Wasn't long enough, man. Just like the Patriots are starting to get good again. No, wasn't long enough.
I mean,
it's one of those things. They haven't been bad, but it's just like they haven't been like, hey, they're the relevant, like, dominant team. So,
yeah.
Well, I mean, yeah, this first year they got beaten in the second round. Last year they got beaten in the Elite Eight, an upset against NC State of all teams in ACC school that got to the Final Four. But, yeah, I mean, go back to the spread. I like Houston plus 5. I think that's the side here. I think Duke is – money line's probably the safe bet if you like Duke. But I really like Houston plus 5 to cover. I think they're going to give them a game. Defensively, they're going to put a lot of pressure on them. And they're going to make Duke work. Their two best players, you mentioned Cooper Flagg, and then they got Knupel, who's a really, really good player. He's an NBA player, too. They got 3 freshmen that are first-round draft picks here at Duke, which will all likely probably come out, and then the Boozer twins coming in. So Duke is here reloading. You know, it's hard to say what's going to happen to the ACC. North Carolina, we got to figure NIL. They'll get it together. NC State just hired the coach from McNeese State, who was at LSU. So NC State, a pretty good basketball program of a rich history. The ACC will be okay. Louisville's getting better there too, so I'm not worried about the conference as a whole, but this year was a down year for sure.
Yeah, I think this game really comes down to, I think Houston led the tourney with averaging 8.5 threes per game, but they also are like one of the worst teams in getting to the free throw line. So if the threes fallen, I like their chances, but Duke, they're deep. And I think Knupel, I think he's also projected to go top 5 in the draft this year.
I don't know if he's top 5, but he is a lottery pick. He's actually a really nice player. He's good. His game has developed a lot. I think for Houston, 3-pointers is big, but I think they got to be aggressive. I mean, Duke isn't very, very deep. I mean, they're young, and even the guys coming off their bench are young. They probably play about 7 guys. Can they challenge Cooper Flagg and get him a little fatigued and tired and really put some pressure on Duke? Duke's basically been doing what UConn did last year, just dominating. Even though Arizona kind of came back, made it a game, they were down 15 points about 10 minutes ago, got it within 5. But Duke has been pretty much on cruise control. They've been the best team so far in this tournament. But, yeah, Houston, defensively, they can get after you. I mean, Tennessee, I thought, was probably the second best team playing-wise in the tournament, and they made them look bad. So,
I mean, it looks silly.
They're gonna do a lot to frustrate them, but Cooper Flagg's a talent that Houston has not seen yet this tournament. So it's an interesting matchup. I'll have Duke. I have Duke winning. I like Houston plus +5, and I'll take the under 136.5.
Yeah, a lot of the projected scores for this game are in the either high 60s or low 70s for both of them.
I think it's probably about right.
Yeah. Well, you mentioned Duke's young. Sometimes being young and dumb is to your benefit. You can either get shocked by the big lights, or you can you don't know any better.
I think we touched on it Monday. I think the last team to be led really by freshmen to win was Syracuse and Carmelo and McNamara. Yep. So that was back in, I think, 2008. So it's been a minute.
The newly minted Hall of Famer. Okay, cool. I'm kind of digging it. Let's recap the women's tournament really quick, and then I just kind of want to make some comments on the NBA with some stuff that's happened in the last few days.
I guess before you go on to that, Rome, while we don't know the exact matchup, picking national title game right now, too, before we record, too, might probably be the call, right? Because it's a Monday night. We'd be recording after the title game.
Yeah, you know, I've been wanting to, like, maybe, depending on how the games go, do like an emergency YouTube only, you know, quick 20-minute YouTube session to go live right before the game. I would like to kind of test that out if possible. I know I'm going to be out with my daughter, but we know you got Duke. Aaron, who do you got winning the whole thing? And we understand we don't know who wins.
Yeah,
yet,
I mean, if we're going off of Florida and Duke getting to the final, I got Duke beating Florida.
Okay. Yeah, I think it's all. I think it's just Duke's to lose at this point. But if I had to pick somebody else, I would go with Auburn, win the championship.
All right. If we're all going Duke, the YouTube show just got a lot less interesting.
I know. Yeah. Exactly. Because we can scratch that off now.
That's, of course, if Duke gets there.
This is true. Maybe that's the emergency pod. Or we just have Rome, wherever he's at, we have him stop by Trader Joe's and just get some snacks and just lean up against the wall and just start eating. And we can just, you know, see what that is. You know, we can do that.
I'd say if it's not Duke, it's going to be Houston. I think Houston, if they Duke, they have the defense to stop, you know, Florida's guard playing. I'll go with Houston if they get by Duke. But the winner of that matchup, I think, wins the title.
Yeah, that's fair, because they have the best defense and the best three-point shooting team. So
that'd be great, because I'd be able to call the SEC overrated in basketball, and then just like football, you know?
We'll just briefly gloss over the women's tournament. It starts tomorrow, which I just learned tomorrow is Friday.
Do you know what time? Hey, do you know what time it starts tomorrow?
Breaking news across the bar. Tomorrow is Friday.
Tomorrow is Friday. So the games are kind of early. 4 o'clock, then 6 o'clock.
Let me look.
I'm gonna definitely watch the UCLA UConn game. That's gonna be a lot of fun. That's gonna be a hell of a game. I recommend you guys watch that game.
LA Homer.
Well, I like UConn, you know. It's unfortunate that Paige Beckers and her team are facing UCLA.
So you said you like UCLA? Who do you like, Rome?
Yeah, the favorites. The number one overall seed.
UConn's women's favored by 7.5.
Yeah.
I like both dogs. I like Texas plus +5, and I like UCLA plus +7.5.
Yeah, UConn's really deep, you know. But they've also haven't faced a team as deep and talented as UCLA. The thing with UCLA, though, they've never been here before. They've knocked out the round prior for the past few years, but they got some veterans there. So it all kind of depends on the nerves and stuff like that. But UCLA has the talent to get past them. Is whether can they offset Beckers going off on a scoring broad. She can post up. She can drive, dish it out, hit from deep. Like, she's been knocking out three-pointers in every single game. And that's the thing that's missing on her resume is a national championship for the women's side. Texas, South Carolina, that's going to be a pretty tough matchup. I know just naturally more on the South Carolina team because they're on ESPN pretty often, and they're deep. They have a hell of a coach. I think they're probably like the favorite to win the whole thing for the women's, if I'm not mistaken. And I'm not sure if Texas has enough to overcome, you know, the coaching and the players.
Isn't UConn favored now, Aaron?
To win it? Let me see.
Yeah.
Yeah, you want to bring those up? Yeah, like who is favored now in both games?
Let me see.
UConn and South Carolina are favored in both games. I think UConn's favored to win the title now, too.
Really?
UConn's a 7.5-point favorite against UCLA.
You know, I don't want to see Gene.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't have that right now. They don't have the odds
Gino.
For who's favorite to win in the women's, but I'm going to say it's probably between South Carolina and UConn for sure. But I think Texas is going to beat South Carolina. You know, that's an all SEC matchup there too. Quietly, we don't, you know, Texas, South Carolina, but
oh, that's right.
I'm going to go with Texas. I'm going to go with Texas, UCLA, what should have been in the Pac-12 if things had been done properly. In
Texas
the
should be the Pac-12.
Yeah. And here,
the Pac-12 should have never gone. It should be the Pac-14 right now.
Even 16, you know, but yeah, I'm going to go Texas, UCLA in the final for the women's with UCLA women's winning the national title. Because I know the men would never win it again.
Dude, you just move out of California already, man. Go,
just saying
go live
it, man.
In like some hick town.
Just saying it, man.
In Arizona.
Maybe I should take Texas since my people are from there. I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm kind of torn between that.
I was supposed to go to the University of Texas. They have a really good music program there.
Yeah.
But didn't. I like Texas.
Well, I'm going to go opposite Aaron. I think you take the chalk in this game. I think you got the two big name coaches, Gino Auriemma, Dawn Staley, for each of the two respective teams for UConn and South Carolina. Based on what I'm seeing right now, Connecticut is the favorite to win the national championship at -165. South Carolina second at +275.
Wow.
UCLA is +800 and Texas is +850. So
wow.
I think I'm going to go opposite Aaron. I'm going to go with the odds makers here. I say it will be a UConn-South Carolina final. I think Paige Beckers is going to get her moment and UConn's going to win the national title.
I wouldn't hate that, actually.
Well, didn't you say you didn't want to see Gene win another one?
No, I don't. He has enough, dude. But
how many national titles does he have? 8 or 9? How many?
I don't know.
We're going to get statistician Jason on that one.
Gino Auriemma has 11,
11.
NCAA
yeah,
D1
dude,
national
many...
championships.
It's a little ridiculous for women's sports, dude. Some of these guys are just racking it
up. So he's got
up.
11. How many did Pat Summitt win? 7 or 8?
Yeah, I think Pat
I think
Summitt.
She had 6.
And Summitt.
Rest in peace.
She had 8.
Okay.
She had 8. So, yeah, Gino, 19 undefeated conference seasons. So he owns the Big East.
What year is this about him at UConn? I'm like 28, 30 years? Maybe longer.
He started about 30 years ago.
Yeah.
Yeah, he started in...
Really? And he's had the same lead head assistant coach since he got there. Like, she's a really big part of it. I can't remember her name, but...
Man, okay. He's been there as long as I've been alive.
Okay, it's possible.
1985.
So wow. when did he win his first national title then?
First national title was in 1995.
Yeah, so it took, yeah. So I remember when obviously we were kids, that's when they started dominating. Because I think Tennessee, like they were rotating them in Tennessee.
Same thing.
Between
yeah,
winning
it
titles.
Was them in Tennessee. Yeah. Who was the other one? There was like a third one.
Stanford, maybe?
Notre Dame
women?
Notre Dame women has not won, have they?
They were good. I don't know if they won, but I know yeah. Stanford, I think that. Because the coach at Stanford just retired a few years ago, right? She'd won 2 or 3 national titles.
Yeah.
I think she retired before they made the move to the, you know, the ACC. And then you got the LSU's women's coach. She's won a couple of national titles, right, at Baylor, LSU, and maybe somewhere else. But, yeah.
Trying to get you the facts here of the number of national titles on this one. I think Aaron's, yeah, you had a little Geno one in 95, and then you had a three-peat by Tennessee. You had Purdue win the national title.
Wow.
Then UConn was back at it. Then Notre Dame.
Okay.
Okay.
UConn three-peated, then Baylor.
Okay.
Maryland.
Maryland's women, wow.
Maryland in 06. Tennessee back-to-back, UConn back-to-back, Texas A&M in 2011, Baylor again in 2012.
So Baylor's been a, that was the third one.
I don't know, there's just two, I guess, if you're they're kind of thinking on there. Then UConn went on the big run, 2013 to 2016, four consecutive national titles. South Carolina then in 17, Notre Dame 18, then Baylor again in 2019. No tournament in 2020. Got Stanford back in the mix. South Carolina, LSU, South Carolina. So I guess if you're saying in the mix on this one, it's really
Baylor, right? They won three.
It's Baylor, but I guess you could say it's really Kim Mulkey.
Yeah. She got the LSU, right? She won by LSU as well.
She was Baylor for 21 years for that run. So I guess between Baylor and LSU, it's been Kim Mulkey being the third one out of that group. So, I mean, we talked about a little bit the top heaviness there, but Geno's definitely owned it. But, you know, Geno has not won the national title since the end of the four-peat in 2016. So, this is your Patriots analogy for Duke right now, Rome. Like, they feel like they're always there. But they haven't won it here for a little while. So this is even their downtime, which is not bad, feels like it's been bad.
Yeah. No, I'm a Steelers fan. I'm very well aware of what it feels like to be close but not there. It's rough. 49er fans, that's rough. Braves fans, Dodgers fans. It's nice, Jason. You'll join that feeling too when your team's consistently good.
You know, if you watch some great Ben Johnson highlights, just dropping knowledge here and the pre-draft workouts.
Ben Johnson's sharp. He is looking sharp.
Bears got a nice.
Exhausted, dude.
Oh, no. He's exhausted in the grinding film, finding the next great guys. That's me in the draft. You know, when Ashton Gentry's drafted here in a couple weeks and the Bears, you know, just got the big running back. He's got a backup quarterback today, Rum. You know, the Bears got a big backup quarterback.
Who?
Case Keenum.
All right.
Well, the Cowboys picked up a quarterback themselves as well.
Who?
Oh, because they lost. They lost their big gun.
Cooper Rush is in Baltimore now.
Is he?
Yeah.
That's a nice pickup for Baltimore.
But they they traded for, was it Joe Milton? So
yeah, from who? The Patriots.
Yeah, from exactly. The Patriots.
Who?
Joe.
Who?
From your Tennessee guys.
I'm just joking.
But yeah, Rome, I mean, you cracked the joke, but I'm just saying, you know, this is going to be the run of the Bears, and you're just going to, Aaron and I are going to be looking and tell you just about Ben Johnson's greatness going forward.
Ben Johnson is looking great. I'm buying more stock every time I see him. So
go ahead, buy all the stock.
All the stock.
I'm a short the stock.
Yeah.
You buy it low right now because the stock and the real stock and any other stock is going down. So I'm buying low on the Ben Johnson stock and every other stock.
Yeah. The time to buy is now because they are dropping like hotcakes right now.
It's not exactly now. The bottom's going to come here in a little while. But yeah. you make sure you sold off and now when the bottom hits here. So
the bottom hits, that's when you get rich.
Once we're done taxing the penguins at the island in the Indian Ocean or whatever is going on with the tariffs. You guys hear about that?
And the jokes write themselves, dude.
Oh,
so there's great. Just so much stuff. Like, we just look like idiots to the rest of the world. It's great. I don't care. Poor penguins. Poor happy feet.
The old penguins.
Hey, they're going to come to a revolt, man, you know?
They are. That's hilarious. All right. Real quick, so Lakers lose. Golden State inches a game away from that fourth seed, I believe. No, fifth seed now.
Golden State, man. I just, you know, I'm always forthright with you guys. Basketball is never kind of the thing I'm watching on the daily, but like, Golden State just has these swings since the post Kevin Durant era, where it's just like, this is a team not making the playoffs, and then I'm just one of the best teams in the NBA the next year.
It's the Jimmy Butler effect, and I just don't get it, dude.
I mean, when they won that title a couple years ago, it was just like, hey, they're just down and out for a couple years, and then, okay, we're just going to be great again. And now, you know, we're that impressive, and now we get Jimmy Butler, and now we're going to be great again. And just,
when they won that championship like a few years ago, like, they did not deserve to be there. I was so upset about that one.
No, it's crazy. And like, and I still think Oklahoma City's the team to beat, because I mean, they just look impressive as hell. But you're also not going to be shocked here if this team just goes on a run and just pulls and just takes everyone's soul out going to the title.
I'll be shocked, Jason. I'll be shocked.
Yeah, you'll be shocked.
You'd be shocked if the Warriors get to the finals.
I would. Yeah, I was last time.
I wasn't last time. I mean,
Rome's rooting against his own self-interest, man. You want the Warriors to win.
I really don't.
You do. That's big time tables up in San Francisco when they go on a little run here, right?
I don't know.
Rome's never worked the tables when they were winning, so he's not Rome, really quite sure.
I mean, I don't know if it's feasible, but I'm thinking if you're thinking restaurant service, Western Conference Finals, you want Lakers Warriors, man. That's the big money nights.
So typically, I only work in like Michelin starred tasting menu restaurants, so it doesn't affect me.
As of right now, you've got Lakers Warriors first round.
Yeah, I don't like it.
Well,
I think the Lakers are going to get into the three spot and eventually pass the Nuggets.
Yeah, I'm not too worried. Golden State needed more so to get ahead of Memphis. Memphis won today, pretty big victory over the Heat. So they stay in the sixth seed, but I like Minnesota. Anthony Edwards, a.k.a. Mini MJ, is tearing it up right now. Had an epic game this past week, and they're going to be dangerous. I think that's like my dark horse to do like another run as we inch closer to the playoffs. But real quick, though, Memphis, I don't know if you guys saw, this is what I want to talk about. Ja Morant got in trouble. He was playing against Golden State, did a little gun signal to the bench. And Steph Curry is crying like a baby to the refs. They don't do anything, but it's all over TV and they show them the highlights. The NBA investigates it.
Draymond was complaining. He went to the referee and said, "Why did you not give him a technical foul?"
It's fucking stupid. And then it came out today, earlier today, this morning, you know, that the NBA said, "Hey, you guys can't do that." It's him and Buddy Hield from the Golden State Warriors. I guess Buddy Hield did it too, but no one's talking about that one. So they both got verbal warnings. And today, after Ja Morant hit his game-winning two-point shot to pull off the victory, he did it again.
Listen. All right.
I don't think he did it again. He did some kind of different variation of something.
It's all over Twitter.
I don't want to start a big political thing here, but I got 2 points in this. All right.
Yeah, let's hear it.
I'm a big hockey guy. All right. We could not have been any happier at the start of Canada-US with these dudes just dropping gloves and throwing haymakers when it's hockey. Why is this different? I mean, I'm not defending basketball here, but, man, we can't do a little bang-bang with the guns. And then, hey, we got Happy Gilmore, too, coming out here in a couple weeks.
That's what I was thinking.
All right.
Sean McGavin.
Yeah, the shooter, man. I mean, you got coming, you know, you just go at the hole once you sink that putt. You get the shooter going, and you'll choke on that, baby. Man, that's the shooter line right there, all right?
Do you guys know the story behind that?
Oh, I do. I wanted to tell. I saw the clip about it.
Go ahead.
You know that, Aaron?
I don't believe so.
Tell us, dude. It's really good.
So Christopher McDonald, who's the actor who plays Shooter McGavin in it, so he wanted to make the putt. He's just like, I legit want to make the putt. And the director's like, all right, I'm going to give you, like, 10 chances or ever to make this putt. So like it's on a fifth or sixth chance or something, drains the putt. And so he's just all goofed up and, you know, just all the juices flowing. And he, you know, he does the shooter thing and goes, choke on that, baby. Was not in the script.
Oh, that's just all ad-lib. The whole just thing is ad-lib.
Because he was really telling everyone who thought he couldn't make this putt, I'm making this damn putt. and it's in the final cut of the movie. And man, that's an iconic scene for you, you know?
Apparently, a lot of people on the staff, the extras were all betting against him, like every putt he missed. They were talking bad shit. So yeah, it was all real. I love that story. Dude, Rich Eisen has great interviews. Great interviews.
Gotta give it to Rich. Awesome. I was watching a good, you know, I know we haven't talked wrestling in a little while on the pod here. I know we're getting off a little tangent here, but WrestleMania is kind of upon us, you know, coming up. WWE's been in Europe the past couple of weeks, putting on some big time shows in Europe for Raw and SmackDown. They were in London this past couple of weeks. And I'm bringing this up because Rich Eisen had CM Punk on, who's one of my favorites out of Chicago. He's going to be main eventing night one of WrestleMania in a triple threat match against Roman Reigns and Seth Rollins. But, you know, Rich had CM Punk on the interview. I was watching little clips of it, and Rich didn't believe that these guys just go out and do their own laundry. You know, that WWE's footing the bill, and CM Punk's like, hey, I got a lot of things. I'm not losing my gear. I'm just going to get a coffee out in London, sit at a laundromat, and do my laundry. So, if you're out and about while WWE's going around, you may see your favorite wrestler at a laundromat or getting a cup of coffee here and there, you know?
You know, that's kind of shocking, but it does surprise me just knowing the history of, like, how corrupt and, like, shady the WWE is. Can't do some laundry.
Yeah, I think they have the option to do it. I think it's a lot different now. Okay. But some of those guys, like Mick Foley, you know, Mankind, Cactus Jack, notorious cheap guy, who just would, like, stay at a Motel 6 and want to split the room with somebody and stop at, like, whatever. Like, so, because basically,
that's Mick Foley, man. Mick Foley.
Yeah, so a lot of those guys, like, there's, you know, they could just be super cheap on there. And other guys now, it's a different, not with modern convenience now. Some of these guys got travel giant buses with drivers and stuff that take them from town to towns when they're, you know, local domestically here. But yeah, like, I think there's some different ways, some of the old school guys way do things, like, hey, I'm gonna do my things on my own. But I think there's other guys that probably have, yeah, personal assistants bringing this stuff from point A to point B.
WrestleMania, man, 2 weeks out, man.
I was reminded by WWE girl this past week.
She coming over at 10:30, man, or what? We're right at that time. Where's she at? Tell her I said hi.
The card is taking shape here. They're coming back stateside. Main event of night one is now officially signed with Roman Reigns, CM Punk, and Seth Rollins, three of the best in the game. Main event night two, we've been getting some good stuff with bad guy John Cena and WWE champion Cody Rhodes. So, I mean, there's some stuff there.
Pumped, man. I'm excited. Ready to rock and roll. Two-nighter.
I'm going to be two-nighter. Be ready. Extravaganza.
Be ready for that extravaganza. For those listening, be sure to catch our episodes of Swords from the Sofa on Apple Podcasts, as well as Spotify, wherever you listen to your podcast. Our last episode is called Sweet and Elite, Torpedo Season in Major League Baseball, Grizzlies Dunk Jenkins, and Red Bull Has New Wings. Catch that episode and catch this one at least once every single week. On those
platforms. Rome was really proud of those titles. You can tell when he was reading those. He wrote this, this is good shit. I'm gonna make sure I'm pumping up this title. Topic I had good shit right here.
That's the first time in the 80 shows we've done, whatever, that Rome has actually gone over the title of a show. So that's how much you know he liked it. I thought you know how much he liked it.
The Baker one I liked too, and that was the one that we got the most hits too. That was
Red Bull gonna come after you, man, with the Red Bull Has Their Wings or whatever like that on that one, you know.
Yeah, they got sued big time for that. People are idiots, dude. I wish I had the balls to sue somebody for something stupid like that. Red Bull didn't give me any wings. Give me $5 million. All right. Surprisingly, we eclipsed an hour and a half again. Go figure.
I told you, take the over on the time.
Yeah,
Over. Even when there's nothing to say, there's something to say.
There's something to say. Source in the Sofa, that'll do it. We out.